Interestingly enough, just yesterday I was saying if I could change careers, it would be to go work for Matt's company because he's flying spaceships now. So anyway, so transactional system administration, man, yeah, what the heck does that mean? Well, first I want to thank everyone for coming, hopefully you'll be awake after that lunch. This is a weird slot to be in, but okay, transactional system administration. I also should warn you, I have a clicker that works about every fifth push of the button, so I'll just be reaching over a lot. So talk outline, with a title like that, I think I am obligated to begin by explaining what the heck does the title mean. What is transactional system administration? And that begs the question, why is it bad? And then I'm going to talk about what we can do instead. So before I begin, let me talk about my second favorite subject, me. And so I've been a system administrator for much too long. And I was at Bell Labs for 7 years and Google for 7 years and a couple other places. And I've written a number of books. I'm now at Stack Overflow. Who here is familiar with Stack Overflow? Okay, some of you, good. My new book, which doesn't use the phrase transactional system administration, but kind of touches on this, is The Practice of Cloud System Administration, which also has nothing to do with the cloud, but the publisher said we should really have the word cloud in the title. And I said, well, that's okay, because what I want in the title is volume two. We want to call this volume two. What I didn't realize is how many OCD friends I have because they freaked out that there is no book called volume one. How could we have a volume two? And I tried to explain to them that the practice of system and network administration is really volume one. They said, but Tom, it doesn't say volume one on the title. And I said, well, if you've ever seen The Godfather, it's not The Godfather Part 1, because they didn't know there was a Part 1 until they made The Godfather Part 2. So there is no The Godfather Part 1. It's just The Godfather. But to the joy and amazement of my OCD friends, I'm glad to announce that there will be updating this book very soon. And actually, my co-authors, we had a discussion at the beginning of the project, and we said, let's save the announcement for Lisa, because Lisa's our favorite conference. And so I'm very glad to announce that there will be a new edition of this book available at this conference next year. This is what it will look like. yes, it'll be the, I just realized it's going to be the pumpkin spice edition. That's really embarrassing. But we're getting a whole additional circle on the front. So how about that? And it's going to have over 300 pages of new material. And you can actually read the 10 of our first new chapters. Where is it? Oh, I guess it's just not on the slide. If you have a SafariBooksOnline.com account, you can already read the first 10 new chapters of this book. And throughout the year, we'll have more and more chapters released. So that's my little commercial break. Let's go on to the actual talk. So what is transactional system administration? Hey, Peter. Hi, how you doing? I'm great, but could I have a bottle of water? That would be awesome. Thank you. Thank you for the water. So that was a transaction, right? I asked for something, it was delivered, and I said thank you. I think a good transaction. Isn't that in databases, the transactions always end with thank you at the end? I think, right. So transactional system administration is when the customer says, would you please do blah, 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 and the system administrator says, yes, here is blah, 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 and then the customer says, I have verified that blah, blah, blah is done. And hopefully they say thank you. And we know what this looks like, right? It looks like a ticket system. We've all seen, I mean, this is every screenshot of a ticket system I could find. And how many people here have a ticket system? Like almost everyone. That's fantastic, because when I came to my first LISA conference in 19, I believe it was 91 or 92, almost no one would have raised their hands. And that's a big change in our industry. And that's also bad. So let me tell you why that's bad. So transactional system administration is bad because you're grinding through tickets. And if you've oriented your whole team around a ticket system, your default behavior is to orient your team around grinding through these tickets. And you're grinding. And if you need to get through more tickets, well, you grind faster. And what that generally means is the pressure is on you, right? If you think about the tickets, you're pushing more and more tickets through the system or at a higher velocity. And the way you do that is to put pressure on the people, right? And it's kind of like cracking the whip. You know, that's kind of the default behavior. And here I have a picture of grinding faster, right? So, and the problem is that we have a finite amount of time. So what do? Well, we work longer hours because there's this pressure to do more velocity, or we do a sloppier job, or we just feel various kinds of stress. And but also, if you've oriented your whole system around this, you become very interrupt-driven, right? An interrupt is someone's opened a ticket, and now you react to that ticket. And being reactive is not a good place to be for a system administration team. It also means that the attention is going to go to the loudest customer, right? When that backlog happens, if you don't have a good prioritization scheme or a triaging system, then attention goes to the loudest customer. And what that means is we ignore the good customers, right? The good customers aren't loud, they're patient, and they're opening their tickets, and we're penalizing them. We instead pay attention to the loud people. So what does that do? It trains the good people to be bad people. They see, oh, if I want some attention here, I have to be a loud jerk, right? So they become loud jerks. So when we, as system administrators, complain about our users and say, oh, they're these loud jerks, who created that situation? Huh, yeah, I had this realization about this. And it also encourages everything to become an emergency, right? Never let a good emergency go to waste. So it also discourages long-term planning, right? Unless there's intervention by management, there isn't going to be long-term planning. No one ever opens a ticket saying, hey, instead of just asking for disk space, would you forecast disk space for the next year and do planning and stuff? Maybe around budget time you do this, but that's once a year instead of as needed on demand. Also, no one ever files a ticket saying, I'd really like this process optimized, right? They just complain, oh man, every time I open a ticket about creating a new virtual machine, it seems to take forever, right? So there isn't necessarily a complaint box. It encourages this situation where the day before a new service gets launched, they open a ticket saying, hey, tomorrow we're launching this new service. I hope you're available to make that happen, right? And of course, what's your reaction? Your reaction is, oh, how much disk space do you need? How much bandwidth? You know, all these different questions that are going to take 6 months to deliver on if because you haven't had a chance to plan for them. So it's encouraging a situation where we're all working in silos and not communicating. It also creates the wrong power relationship. So customers tend to look at the system administrators as servants, and you look at the customers as these pain in the butts. So none of that's good. Another reason that this is bad is it doesn't scale really well. If you, on average, 100 tickets a week per sysadmin, and you know you're gonna need to handle twice as many tickets next year, what, you're gonna hire twice as many people? That usually isn't possible budget-wise. It currently isn't possible just logistic-wise. How many people here have an open position in their team that, And how many people, keep your hands up if that position has been open for more than 3 months or more than 6 months? Yeah, more than a year? Yeah, if the position's been open more than a year, then you don't actually have that position, right? So, and it's difficult. If you have to scale by getting more people, you know, managing twice as many people is not twice as difficult for your manager or your customer or the company or the team, right? If you have a team of 5 people, it's pretty easy to manage. A team of 10 people is a whole different set of skills because you have 5, you have more connections. Someone with a math background, tell me, is that 5 factorial or 5 squared or 5 times n minus 1 squared? Anyway, yeah, math is hard. And it's so 1990s. I mean, I don't know if you saw this email thread where I kind of blew up at Mario saying, this is not how we should be doing our system administration. Users hate opening tickets, right? We forget about this because we're so ticket-oriented, but it's intimidating to open tickets. It's stressful, especially for non-technical users that feel like they're traveling in a foreign land. Or I always, right? Because it's like going to England your first time. Like you understand every word they're saying, but you have no idea what they're saying. That's what it's like for a user opening a ticket, right? I'm using these words that I think are right. It's embarrassing. I mean, it's embarrassing for users. So that's why they resist doing it. And how have we been solving that problem? Well, if you've taken any of my tutorials, years ago, I had all these, ways of funneling people into the ticket system and making sure that they, it's easy for them to open a ticket and how to organize the tickets better. Well, maybe tickets are the problem, right? Maybe the sad fact is that there's a good reason that users hate opening tickets. So it's not good for us, and it's not good for the users, and yet we keep doing it. So that brings us to the next topic. Have I convinced you that ticket systems are bad? I mean, it's better than nothing, better than a sharp stick in the eye, but has all these problems. Okay. I'll tell you that later. I'll say it now. Years ago, I had a job at a kind of messed up, very small company, and someone asked me, what am I doing there? I said, well, most of what's happening at that company is everyone's walking around poking themselves with sharp sticks, and now I have them just poking themselves with dull sticks, and they think it's amazing, but I can't believe that this is all I've been able to achieve. So, so is it really killing us? Come on, Tom, was that title picked just to be kind of a link-baity title to get you all into the room? Yeah. I think it is. And, because when we're pushing and pushing and pushing on the grinder to get more tickets through, it's applying more force over the same area, and that's how you create pressure, right? But also, think about the amount of depression in our industry and the amount of burnout in our industry. And how many people here have read John Willis's blog post about suicide in our industry? Yeah, really serious stuff. What would an honest job ad be for a system administrator? A real honest job ad. Come work for us, nice company, decent benefits, it's stressful and you're gonna hate yourself for working here. That would be an honest job ad at a lot of companies, sure. So I want to fix that. But before we fix it, we have to think about how did we get here? Oops. How did we get here? And it's not just ticket system. Like I said, you have to organize your work somehow. But ticket system creates certain dynamics. And so tickets are better than total chaos, but it's been a curse nonetheless. And And this is the part of the talk where I want to apologize for two things. I want to apologize because I was part of the problem. I have been advocating for people to use ticket systems since the early 90s. Here's me, I believe this is my first presentation ever at LISA, and I am telling people how awesome ticket systems are. I want to apologize, as I said, for two things. First, I want to apologize for being part of the movement that I think overemphasized ticket systems. I also want to apologize, the other bad thing I did in the 90s was, what was going on with my hair? You can't see, there's a black background, you can't really see it. Here's a better, what was going on with my hair? And how many people came to LISA in the 90s? Raise your hands. And none of you could have just taken me aside for a minute and just been like, Tom, what's going on with your hair? I mean, really, this is, here's my comparison. What were you saying? I wouldn't have listened? No, I think I would have. I think I would have, yeah. So, you probably filed a ticket saying get a haircut and I missed it, absolutely. But we were busy pushing harder, so I didn't notice. Now, I did, you know, at one point I thought, well, maybe this is our fault. Maybe we're just incompetent at managing our own time and not being very efficient. So I tried helping in that area, but that's not going to fix it. I mean, this is, you know, not a personal problem. This is a systemic problem. So my conclusion so far, and I hope I'm repeating myself. So you need a way to track your work, but it shouldn't dictate your life. And it shouldn't have all these bad dynamics that push us in the wrong direction. So ready for some solutions? Because I don't have all the answers, but I'll substitute by having three decent case studies. So here's three things that I've seen that are better than ticket systems. I currently work at Stack Overflow, and let me tell you something we did. We attempted collaborative system administration. We took our SRE team, our site reliability team, and we killed the ticket system, almost without warning. One day we said, okay, we're not accepting tickets anymore. And what we're gonna do instead is each development team is going to get one of the SREs as kind of a part-time employee of their team. And that person's going to attend their meetings, and instead of if a team needs, for example, you know, a DNS update or something, instead of filing a ticket requesting that, well, that's just going to be part of their work management system. If they're using bug tracking or Agile or whatever, that DNS request would just be one of the tasks to be done that week, and our person would be on the team. And so it was more collaborative. It worked pretty well. So we went from being pushed to collaboration, which is great. It's working with various levels of success, depending on the team. They like the fact that there's more direct collaboration. The problem is that this only works because we're a small company and we have a very small number of development groups, so each can get one. If we, you know, this would not scale to thousands of development teams, but it's a, if you're a small company, I suggest you give this a shot. There's a hand up there. What? Ah, okay, so what about auditing? Well, so this actually puts us at the mercy of each individual team's you know, work tracking system. So if they're using a bug tracking system or a Trello board, Trello's our sister company, so a lot of people use Trello at our company. It's also weird, I have to say it's weird that each of our development teams picks a slightly different thing, but I think they all use Trello now. Yeah. Was that a question?
Mm-hmm. We're still on a ticket system, and we still have to work within the dev sprints, which
Yeah, well, it's something we're experimenting with. But experimentation is good. Case study number two, my experience at Google SRE, now they have a much larger scale. And what I learned there was the emphasis there is for SREs to create self-service versions of things. So if they are the monitor, like the load balancing team, rather than taking tickets saying, please add this to the load balancer, they have a self-service way that people can add their own stuff to the load balancer. Now that sounds really risky and dangerous, and it can be, except the change requests come in the form of a pull request. So they do get some kind of approval, and also if you, now if the team wants wants to be able to handle those approvals faster, it encourages them to write test automation so that they get closer and closer to just an almost automatic approval. The build system is similar. The CI/CD, you know, continuous integration system is similar. There isn't a team that you have to open a ticket with saying, hey, we have this new project, would you add it to something like Jenkins or Team City? It's all self-service. So what the team is maintaining is the service and the documentation. And they, the last example is not necessarily human customers, but detecting hard disk failures and replacing them is also something that is done as a service. So it's just this service that's always running. I'll get back to that in 1 second. Wait a minute. Okay. Monitoring is simple, and this is something we've emulated at Stack, is we built a monitoring system called Boson. You can go to boson.org, it's open source. And one of my favorite features of it is that we don't create the monitoring collection system or collecting agents or the alerts. Our developers can create their own agents and their own alerts. So it empowers them. And this is actually much better because they understand their code much better than we could ever understand, right? If someone asked me to start monitoring their system, if I don't know anything about it, I'm just gonna like ping to see if it's up. But they understand the internals. So they collect all this internal introspection data, put it in our database, and now they can, you know, have these amazing graphs. In fact, the first week that we released this to developers, the first person that started collecting some stuff about their service, they're like, oh great, that was easy. A couple days later, they had enough data to actually draw a pretty graph, and it was not the graph that they expected. And they started looking at the code, and they found a really big bug, a big performance issue. So like on the, like it paid for its, you know, self on the first try. That's awesome. So this becomes a workforce multiplier. If you do a task, you can do that task as fast as you can do that task. But if you create a self-service system, you multiply yourself. You are a workforce multiplier. Gennady is a open source project sponsored by Google, and when I was at Google, we used it for maintaining this fleet of virtual machine clusters. And when I first joined the team, if you needed a new VM, you would open a ticket, and we would manually create the virtual machine for you. And very soon after, we had automated the VM creation. There was a tool. So we were able to process those tickets faster because we had this great tool that did most of the work for us. Then we invented this web-based portal. And best of all, we eventually added an API. So it wasn't even, it wasn't just us that had automated our end of things. The developers could automate their end of things also. So I promised I'd talk more about handling failed disks. Carla, I have her last name on a slide soon. Glesser? I used to work with her and I can never remember how to pronounce her name. That's shameful. She was telling me the story about how Gmail handles their disk failures. So Gmail obviously has a lot of storage, and when they were new, they had a lot of disk failures. If a disk fails, you know, once every 100,000 hours, and you have 100,000 hard disks, that's one an hour, right? It's just a numbers game. So they had this process this manual process where every time a disk would fail, the failure would have to be detected. It might be one of many disks on a machine, so you would drain that machine. Draining means moving any processes that are on it off of that machine, and any unique data has to be moved off of that machine. The disk is then replaced, and then the machine is reintegrated into the Gmail system. So the original system that did this process was called Carl. There was a guy named Carl. And he was in the data center, and this is what he did all day. And version two, they finally wrote some tools, literally by kind of following him around and watching what he did, and like, okay, we can automate this. And so the original automation for that was called eCarl, the electronic version of Carl. And now it's this fully automated, beautiful system, and she has a lot of interesting stories about what it takes to build that kind of thing. But again, we've gone from pushing Carl to go faster to, if this automated system isn't fast enough, we push the software, right? We see, why is this not, you know, we optimize the software. We find its bottlenecks and we fix those things. Now, for those of you who are saying, Tom, this sounds great, but like, I'm not, you know, running services in a big data center, let's look at laptop distribution. You can't get more old school sysadmin than that, right? Well, what is important about laptop distribution? Let's see. You need to know when someone needs a new laptop. You need to install the operating system. And you need to do some kind of capacity planning so you know when to order more laptops, right? Well, these can be automated. And at a lot of companies, at Google, they are. So how would I know that someone needs a laptop? Well, I can monitor the HR database, because anytime someone gets hired, they're going to need a laptop. That's a rule that we have. New employees get a laptop. So we can automate that. Employees get a new laptop every 2 or 3 years. We can automate that. They get email at the 2-year or 3-year anniversary saying, you know, click this link to order your new laptop. For other exceptional laptop needs, we can have a web portal that lets people order them. So now we have automated the need for a laptop. We could have another team that's automating the OS installation. How many people here have their desktop OS installation automated to the point where a non-technical person can wipe and reload their box? Like less than a third. Okay. So once it's automated to that point, your laptop distribution team can be a bunch of people that are not necessarily very technical, just kind of a clerical workers or people that might work in the facilities department. They know they, you know, you don't have to be super technical to unpack a PC, press F12 while it's booting or whatever, wait for the operating system to install and move it out. And actually, you can turn that process into kind of an assembly line process and start using all those assembly line management techniques. And capacity planning, also something that can be automated. Probably not worthwhile till you're at a big scale, but you know, there you go. And this is better because it scales better. Your technical people, which is a rare resource, are doing something once that is scaling no matter how many buildings or people that you hire. It's a better division of labor, and it's less boring work, right? I mean, it's much more interesting to be on the automation side than carting around machines, right? So it turns the process into more of an assembly line process. And you've heard this quote tons of times before at this conference and others. You don't want to, don't build cars. Be the people that build the robots that build the cars, and you will never be obsolete. I was talking with someone last night. They said, you know, I have this coworker that's really afraid of automating because he'll be out of work if we automate his job. And I said, your team probably has a 1,000 projects that the company wishes it would work on, and you're only working on 100. You really think if he automates that one job, the other 900 things that are being ignored are going to stay ignored? No, you're going to be the valuable person that can automate things and eat into that 1,000 backlog. You can do similar things for laptops as with account creation. I think system administrators should not create accounts. The HR department should say, we've hired this person, or let this person go, or their name has changed. Those are all HR functions. And the reflection of that, or and that that change in status should be reflected by automation, creating accounts, suspending accounts, whatever. So this turns all of our system administration tasks into services, and then we are managing the service like a software project. And you know, we might not, well, I will make the assertion that we are better at managing software projects than we are at old school system administration projects. This is the quote I was looking for Carla Geiser. If a human operator needs to touch your system during normal operations, you have a bug. The definition of normal changes as your system grows, right? So when Gmail was new, Carl was okay. But then it was a bug that Carl had to do all those things. So in this case study, we've turned various push things into software development. And the management of software development is pretty mature. Now, there's still going to be some need for interrupt-driven stuff, but your help desk kind of shrinks as the number of teams that you have doing service-oriented system administration grows and grows. So your help desk deals with the remaining reactive and unplanned and interrupt-driven stuff, and your your development teams or SRE teams are project-focused, they're planned, you can use agile methodology. And like the session earlier, Jez was talking about the ability to be more product focused, turn your what you do into a product, and now you're doing product management. And I said three case studies, but I have kind of a half case study. So personal time management. I've been teaching time management for system administrators for years. About 2 years ago, someone during one of my classes said, Tom, what you're teaching is very similar to Agile, the whole Scrum methodology. You take a day's worth of work. Every morning you think about like what I can achieve today and you try to achieve it. And then the next day you repeat that and you keep taking these chunks of work. She said, Tom, you've basically recreated a one-day, one-person Scrum. Okay, kind of a sidebar. How many people here are familiar with Kanban? Wow, lots of people, awesome. I can go quick, but let me show you my system administrator's view of Kanban. We tend to have a lot of tickets, right? We got tickets and tickets. No, they don't look like that at all. They look like that. Yeah, we got lots of tickets. But to our users, what they look like is this. Right? Everyone's waiting in line for their ticket to be dealt with. So Kanban is a better way of organizing your work. And the Kanban purists in the audience are going to scream because I'm giving a very kind of touchy-feely, or not a rough version of Kanban. But Kanban organizes the work as things we've received, and they're kind of in a holding bin. The things that get prioritized, and the color in this chart is priority. So we have a couple urgent tickets and then some less urgent tickets. And they sit in the prioritized bin until they get assigned to somebody and then they get completed. And this is just a different way of organizing your work, but it actually makes it easier to work on your tickets because I know I've been in systems where I've had 500 tickets assigned to me, and now I'm just flooded. In Kanban, you set a rule like people can only have 3 tickets assigned to them at any given time. Okay. The other nice thing about Kanban is instead of measuring, if your metrics around your ticket system are, how many tickets you did this week, in Kanban you have much better metrics. How long does it take to triage time? How long does something sit idle? And how long does it take to complete? And these metrics can be used to drive more interesting behavior. Okay. So what does Kanban look like? So I went to Wikipedia and Google image search. So some people manage their Kanban with a different set of columns. It can be, you can add things as the, the way you want to manage your project dictates. You can do it much more complicated. Number of books, the slides are available online. And there are a number of different products that let you do Kanban. You could do it with index cards on a whiteboard, you could do it with Trello or LeanKit or many others. And just for the people who haven't experienced Kanban, a very common technique is to say, okay, every Monday, for example, we're all gonna take three items and we're gonna work those issues for the rest of the week, and we're gonna do these 1 week sprints. And if you've never worked in an environment like that, it's what a stress reducer, because if you get done early, then you're not like, oh, what more can I do? Okay, but I'm running low on time, so let me just say one thing you need to do if you're gonna adapt this to a help desk is you might wanna have, you need some way of handling the urgent small tickets. And I recommend that you assign one person a week to not take any tickets, but to be the interrupt sponge. And this is also known as like a fast lane. Okay, so in summary, this technique, we've taken the push and we've made it pull, right? We're pulling three tickets a week through the system instead of feeling this pressure. And this is great because if management wants more velocity, they want more things going through the system, you can say, great, you can't push us, we're on a three per week schedule. If you want us to do four per week, you have to enable us to have, make tools that make the tickets smaller, or you can hire more people. Now you have a negotiating tool with management about how you're gonna handle these. Oops. In the interest of time, I'm gonna skip over this, but if you think about the Genius Bar at Apple, that's kind of a pull system also. They're gonna take a certain number of appointments each week rather than trying to cram everything through. Okay. Yes, so in conclusion, moving from a push environment to a pull environment is one of the DevOps principles. If you're one of the people who, and there's fewer and fewer of these every time I give a talk, but if you're like, oh, DevOps, we don't need that. This is actually one of the principles of DevOps. A lot of people think DevOps can only apply to a software development environment, but I'd like to show examples of how the DevOps methodology can apply to anything that is a repeated process. So your take homes, pull is less stressful, it's more healthier, it's safer for us as system administrators, it's also avoidable. Work does need to be tracked, but we can reorganize our teams by either a collaborative environment or setting up self-service projects or Kanban. And lastly, I could use some help. I'm looking for success stories to write about on my blog that, fit into this category. And some homework. So reimagine your team as a, how would you structure your work if you were gonna be a pull environment instead of push? Read the Phoenix Project and push the automation, not the people. So thank you very much.